Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Sorry.
There we go.
How are you, Abigail?
I'm good. I'm tired, but good.
Sorry. I'm so sorry to keep you waiting, and I know you're on a heavy schedule as well.
It's cool. I'm going down to Reading today to do the Reading Festival.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah. So that's why
amazing.
I have an afternoon show. But yeah.
I'm so sorry to get you up early.
No, it's fine.
Shall we? I think I'm just going to have to improvise the top and tail. Because you didn't send me any headers. Oh, where is it? It's in WhatsApp? Oh, okay. Thank you. Okay, let me do that then. Thank you. The spontaneity. Sorry.
Leave it in.
Mm. God, this is the future, isn't it? I'm just going to turn into Mae West eventually. The Spontaneity Shop presents the Guilty Feminist Watchers, and just like that, the Sex and the City reheal, with me, Deborah Frances White, and my very special guest, Abigail Ashimon. Season 2, Episode 11, The Last Supper, Part 2, Entree. Abigail, thanks so much for joining us.
Good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Now, I can't wait to get into this episode of And Just Like That, or as I prefer to think of it, Michael Patrick King's fever dream that we all seem to have entered. I'm just going to do a recap for everybody. So the Last Supper begins with Sarah Jessica Parker's personal Judas calling to wish her well. That's right, Kim Cattrall makes a cameo evoking Annabelle Bronstein, her Soho House British alter ego. As soon as she hangs up, Carrie tells her cat, "I don't need more drama." Seems random. It's actually quite pointed. And speaking of no more drama, on the other side of town, Charlotte lectures a complaining Harry on behalf of women everywhere that him making breakfast isn't doing it all and he needs to keep the drama for his mama. And speaking of mamas, Miranda goes to build a bridge with the father of her Brady, Steve Brady, and asks to be friends.
He checks in that she's not going to go straight again, as Sex and the City once more can't get its head around bisexuality. Meanwhile, on the other side of town, Naya gets told straight up that she's been elected to the prestigious Law Institute, but instead of being happy, she goes home depressed she has no man to share it with. This is a great advertisement for not being happy, even on your best day, if you're single. Oh, it seems impossible. Meanwhile, on the other side of town, Harry and Charlotte do another in a series of Apple advertisements and showcase the iPhone 14, somewhat blatantly. And Seema turns out to be the doubting Thomas of the Last Supper, worried that her boyfriend Ravi is pulling away because she said, I love you, doubting his love. In fact, he's obsessed about being able to shoot in Cairo in front of the Sphinx. And from the mystery of the Sphinx to the mystery of the sphincter. Giuseppe convinces Anthony the only way to open his heart is to open his bottom. And just like that, Anthony stops denying Giuseppe three times before the cock crows, so to speak, and gives in, although the look on his face isn't clear about how much he wants to do it again. Meanwhile, Carrie, the Jesus herself of the Last Supper, faces 40 days and 40 nights alone in the wilderness after her real Judas kiss, Aiden. He betrays her with the worst excuse I've ever heard. If a man says he can't see you at all for 5 years, like you can't even visit him when his teenage kid is with his mom until the kid is 20 and already at college for 2 years, girl, I've got one thing to tell you. He's just not that into you. That is my Sex and the City recap. Well, Abigail, I cannot wait to get into it with you. What did you think of this episode?
All right. So I have a little confession, because I think I told you my plan was to watch. I hadn't, when we said we'd do this, watched any of it. And I was going to watch the two seasons of Just Like That and then go back and rewatch the first two seasons of Sex and the City. And because I heard the show was so freaking bad, I kept putting it off. So I literally watched two whole seasons in 2 days. And then I watched three episodes of the original and Sex and the City. And here's the thing, like, it's definitely has some plot points that are questionable, and it's definitely like not a perfect show, and Just Like That isn't, but I didn't think it was that bad. And going back and rewatching Sex and the City, it's like there was always something to yell at your television about. Like, like, there's like, what is she doing? Why would you choose that? Like, the whole thing. And I think that's why we watched it for so long, is because you were like, I can't believe it. And so I assumed going in that this would be a huge departure from the original series, when in actuality, it was just as infuriating and disappointing as the original series.
Excellent. Okay. I do think the storytelling of the original series, the tightness of the themes of the jokes, the callbacks, was much superior. And you know, Sex and the City's family, we always say that, so we're allowed to criticize it. We know how hard it is to make a TV show. But this last episode, I think you may have been in the slightly hypnotized, because you watched it all in 2 days.
I mean, by that point, it was in the wee hours of the morning, and I had allegedly had some weed by the time we got to the last episode. So bear that in mind. I will say, bringing back Samantha, and I have to say, in the Sex and the City era of my friends in New York, I was the Samantha. And just like that, I am also the Samantha, because I, too, moved to London and never talked to my New York friends again. we're so similar. Like, Kim Cattrall definitely should have done that cameo, because they threw everything at her to do it and did it all on her terms. Like, take the money and run, girl. But like
$1 million, they say. $1 million.
Yeah. And you
highest paid cameo in history.
And you know what? It did not serve the story at all. It was not satisfying as a viewer and like a fan of Sex and the City and a fan of Samantha. It was like literally like like they could have just left it out and it would have been fine. It felt so heavy-handed. And as a viewer, you're just watching it going, she fucking hates them. She hates them all. She hates them all. We know she hates them all.
I was so surprised by Sarah Jessica Parker's acting because it must be quite painful for her to pay, because the whole deal with Kim Cattrall was always she didn't feel she was getting paid as much as Sarah Jessica Parker. I'm sure there were other issues, but that's what she would always say in the press. Mm-hmm. And minute per minute, she's now for the first time being paid more than Sarah Jessica Parker. But I mean, per minute.
Yeah.
Per minute.
Yeah.
Because they say that Sarah Jessica Parker's getting $1 million an episode and she got $1 million for the cameo. So I was so surprised. Her acting was amazing. She was like, "That's so great to see you." And she genuinely looked happy. Obviously, they were recording separately, yeah, but they were filming it separately. They never spoke. But I was really, really surprised by what a great job they both did at pretending to be happy to be talking to the other one. And I know that that's their characters. Yeah,
they should,
not them as people.
They should get an Emmy for pretending to like each other.
I really think so, because it was so convincing. And I was like, oh, I enjoyed the cameo, I have to say. I was much less disappointed than I thought I would be, because Cynthia Nixon said, "I'm really worried the fans are going to be disappointed. It's really short." It basically said it's not that good. And I really enjoyed just seeing her say nice things about the show and the apartment. And I loved her bag. Patricia Fields got her a great bag. And yeah, I enjoyed it. I hear what you're saying is it did not advance the story. Yes, that is clear. And that's why they did it as a cold open, I think. It's like, here's a little cute thing. And they said that they wanted it to be a surprise, and they were bummed out it leaked. But I don't know that that's true, because they knew it was going to get so many viewers.
Yeah.
It's not going to get as many viewers if nobody knows about it.
Exactly.
On the original watch. So I don't know about that. But I did enjoy it. Let's go into that. Charlotte and Harry didn't really have a storyline this week. So they had a phone ad. Like at the end, they're literally filling up the setting up the phone. We talked last week about how many product placements there are that are really tiresomely blatant. So they didn't really have a storyline this week, except her telling him, "Hey, you're not doing it at all. Fine." That's Miranda, though, made up with Steve, and also weirdly made up with Che, who does not deserve to be made up with after that stand-up that they did.
No, and I sent you a TikTok account of a guy that I follow named Anthony.
Oh, that was so funny. I watched all his stuff.
And
oh my God, his takedown of Che's stand-up and his rewriting of Che's stand-up, you got to watch it. It's excellent.
Yeah, he's so good. So his name is, I believe, Anthony Gillette or Gillette. I can't, but his
it's a combination of Anthony and Giuseppe, yeah, basically.
And his,
which is hella ironic.
His TikTok handle is, and I'm going to say this wrong, but Gillette Slays with one L. But anyways, when he talked about, like, how did they watch Che take down Miranda like that, and Miranda's like, "I'm going to leave," and then Aiden and Carrie just sit there, like, first of all,
you would never.
It's so uncomfortable. Like, they don't think it's funny either, and it's like
they don't leave with her.
Why wouldn't
they? Don't leave with
yeah,
her.
Yeah, why? I mean, I guess the only reason why they didn't leave, so in the storyline, Che and Miranda can have that blowout without them standing there. But like, you would leave. You, like, Carrie's a bad friend.
If Miranda would simply say, like, that they would just uncomfortably move away when Che came out. And, like, she would say, "You go," and they would get in a taxi. Yeah. But they needed to show the solidarity. And they needed to let Carrie say to Che, "Hey, I don't think that was cool. Yeah. She's my friend." Like, you know, or at least just leave. You know?
Yeah.
At least just leave. And I don't understand. If your ex took you down that way in a comedy club with some horrible and unfunny material, I would not say to you, "You have to come to a party with them." I'd say to them, "Hey, Abigail, I was really down after the breakup and that stand-up you did. Like, is it okay if you don't come to the party? I would say that to the other person.
Well, and here's the thing with the Last Supper thing and how Carrie's like, I'm going to invite Che and I'm going to invite your ex-husband. And
I thought she was going to invite Steve and Steve never turned up.
Yeah. Well, she said she would. And then Steve wasn't there because she was like, he's my friend too.
Like, I was really shocked by that. Imagine going to a dinner party with the person you left your husband for.
Yeah.
And your husband.
Here's the thing. Like, the whole Last Supper felt very much like a middle school play where everyone gets to be on stage at the end because it's the end of the play. Like, in reality, that saying goodbye to that apartment should have been the three of them. It should have been Charlotte, Miranda, and Carrie. And if you want to bring in, like, Lisa and Naya and Seema, you absolutely could, as they were the, like, they needed three women to replace Samantha, by the way. Like, that would have been fine. But to have that huge, fancy-ass dinner, it was like, no, it should be the three of them. Because that's who was always in the apartment, was the three of them.
I think it should have been the three of them, and then you get Samantha to call in.
Yeah.
That would have been really actually quite moving. The three of them just sitting on boxes, you know? Like, the whole place is cleared out, and they come, you know, the three of them come and sit in boxes, and then Samantha phones.
Yeah.
And that would have been amazing and poignant. But they wanted to have these, I mean, the weird narcissistic CB napkins. Can you imagine giving everyone a napkin with your initials on?
Yeah. And just the whole, like, Michelin star dinner where it's like, eat the olive, then eat this olive, and then have the spoon. And everyone's like, wow. I'm like, okay, cool. But gastronomy, I can't say the word.
Gastronomy.
Like, they always went to fancy restaurants and, like, cocktail bars and stuff, but that was never what the show was about. No. It just felt so...
But that Charlotte says, do you remember when we ate cold noodles here? My memory of them being there is that takeout, or they would bring stuff and, you know, they'd share a bottle of champagne together or something like that. If I was in the room, I would have pitched the three of them just sitting on the floor because there's no furniture left. And they're just sitting there together and they've got takeout and they've maybe hired like a really fancy cocktail waiter, which you can do to make them cosmopolitans. Yeah. So she sort of turns it into the bar of their use.
Yeah.
And Samantha, that's when you use your Samantha phone in.
Yeah, I agree.
Samantha's saying, I've got a cosmopolitan. I'm here in London and I'm toasting you. And not this ridiculous thing of, like, I was going to fly there for one night.
Why?
And environmentally outrageous
behavior, which they've always done. Why didn't they contact us before they did this?
Every week I wonder this.
Also, I will say the whole Last Supper with, again, everyone out there, like, you see all the characters, you put a button on everyone. It did feel like, okay, we're going to end this. There's not going to be any more. This is the end. Carrie winds up alone. Other people are pairing off. And then I found out this morning that they are going to do a third season. And I'm just like, and now that I've seen these two seasons, now I will watch it. I will watch it. But I'm like, part of me is just like, just end it. Just end it.
We're all watching it. To tell you that I will watch it is the reason that's getting a season three. People are watching it. And that's, it will go on, I think, as long as we watch it. Can I ask you, Naya's storyline?
What storyline?
Well, exactly. I've written the speech. Do you mind me reading you a speech? This is the speech I wish that I think is worthy of the old Sex and the City that Naya should have given when she came through the door. So she just gets this big prestigious thing, the thing she's been waiting for most in her whole career. Most people will never get it. And she comes and says to Miranda, yeah, but all I wanted to do was ring Andre Richard, my ex. And Miranda says, be happy. Like, you've got this amazing life. And she says, but I've got no man to share it with. And I don't even want to go out for dinner to the party. And she convinces her to go. And she says, well, you've got to stay by me because I'm super sad. I don't want to talk to people. And then bumps into this chef who's hit on her in a bar and goes, oh my God. Okay. So this is the speech that I think earns her bumping into a chef. All right. She walks through the door. Picture this. She gets the news. She's been accepted into this prestigious law institute. She walks through the door. She tells Miranda, and then she says, "Today, I finally achieved my career dream. And do you know what my first thought was? I wanted to call my ex-husband. And for a second, I thought, oh, I've got what I want, but I've got no man to share it with. And then I imagined calling him, not the fantasy of him, him. I imagined protecting his feelings so as not to emasculate him because my career was going better than his. I remembered making myself smaller. I remembered him wanting me to have a baby I didn't really want. And I imagined myself being pregnant now that I have this huge opportunity and I'm on the threshold of the next part of my career and how conflicted I'd feel. I remember being married, not the idea of being married. And I realized I wanted to come home, share this news with a person who'd straight up be happy for me, someone who'd understand how big a deal this was, a lawyer, a woman. I wanted to share this news with you, Miranda. And now I want to go and have dinner cooked for me by a man with a Michelin star. I finally got it. You do not need a man to be happy, especially if you can hire a man to cook for you. I still want a good relationship, but not at the expense of everything else. I'm not compromising after today because I've built an amazing life on my own. So someone has to be worth it to share it." And then she walks in and the chef is there and he's the man of her dreams.
That literally gave me cold chills, Debs. Like, I think that is such a better thing. Because, like, you can't, like, exactly that. You can't imagine if you were in a relationship for so long, getting good news and thinking you want to call your partner and then realizing you're not going to call your partner. But, like you point out in their speech, like, they broke up for a reason. And that's got to occur to you. When you get this, like, good news, it just
that she wanted to stay home. It's like she didn't want to be out, like, at a party going, "Guess what happened to me today?" Like, she couldn't be happy for herself without a man there. And I'm like, that was never the message of this show. And I feel like any of the old characters, even if Carrie had broken up with Big, if it had been the same day that she found out she got a novel published or something, she would have been like, "Fuck that guy, we're going out for cocktails." Like, I genuinely think, I just can't understand why a character like Naya wouldn't. I understand people are human, people want stuff. It's okay to want a partner, it's okay to want a relationship, it's okay to want romance, it's okay to want love and validation and sex and all of those great things, and people are entitled to want them. But that was a horrible message for me. I was just like, no, on the day that happens, you're happy. Maybe you have a downer in a few days, but no, I don't believe it. I was just like, at least show me a character who's happy. I'm not saying no one would feel that. I'm saying, ugh.
Yeah, well, especially with them working so hard to bring this series into, like, 2023, being like, look, we've diversified the cast and there's, like, queerness and there's, you know, all of this stuff going on. It's like you go back to, like, I just want a boy. And
I mean, just unbelievable.
It does
unbelievable.
Remind me of, I don't know if you remember this episode in the original Sex and the City. I think it's Samantha who goes out for dinner and she gets stood up and she's all embarrassed because she's, like, in this crowded restaurant by herself. And then at the end of the episode, it's either Samantha or it's Carrie, but they're talking about what it's like to dine alone. And one of them goes out to dine alone and it's like a glass of wine and a good book. Like, I can be alone. And it was
yeah,
kind of like,
Carrie actually does it. She says, "I take myself out to lunch," and she says, "without a book, without a project, without anything, without a magazine, just me and myself and just a glass of wine, a lunch, and I'm just going to sit here alone and feel that and experience that and, like, find happiness in it." And listen, people are allowed to want partners. There's nothing wrong with wanting a relationship. It's just such a – feels so – sad to me that a woman would get this huge news and not want to be with her sisters on that night and be like, "Yeah, sisters doing it for themselves." Like, you know, it just, or just be happy as a human being. Like, you don't even, it doesn't even have to be a sister thing. Just be like, "Well done, me."
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, I'm desperate to get on to two things. One is Anthony and Giuseppe. Before we get on to that, I did speak to my friend Jessica Regan, who's done this show. And she and I were saying what we're struggling with is every time a woman says, I want to find the love of my life, this unbelievably gorgeous silver fox with no baggage or commitments walks in. So Seema's like, oh, I really wish I could find love. And then in walks this silver fox film producer who's suddenly ready to commit in his 50s and seems to have no previous relationships. And the same thing with, you know, now Naya's gone, oh, I wish I had the most handsome man in the world who also wanted to be with me and was gorgeous and single. And along he comes. And I'm like, come the fuck on. And Jess Regan and I were both saying, where are all these men in their 50s? I'm not saying no men in their 50s want to commit, but generally, if a man has never had a relationship before, he's not going to be good at it in his 50s. And if a man looks like these men, he's probably had long-term relationships before, or he's got serious commitment issues. I'm sorry.
Like the Hollywood director. It's like, if he's a Hollywood director in his freaking 50s, he's been married minimum four times.
Minimum four times. And they've not said he's not been, but there's been no reference to other wives or children, or he's out of a divorce. Or it's just like he just sails in. And apparently he's so demanding, he can't decide on an apartment because he can't even decide on an apartment. He's so demanding. But then he's the best boyfriend in the world. And I'm like, how is a man that can't commit to an apartment rental and is so demanding another estate agent wants to get him off his books going to be a good boyfriend?
Yeah.
He's not. But he is. He's just straightforward. And what we were saying is, in the old Sex and the City, you would get a Richard or like – Burger, somebody who, yeah, like might look good on paper, but actually was very complicated. You know, there was a reason that Richard Wright couldn't commit. He was that guy that he seemed like, or Burger was so emasculated by her work, you know, or they always, you know, Trey, you know, had massive psychological issues. And you know, even the guys that look good on paper were complicated, and they're now delivering in these just guys like, yeah, I'm ready to commit, and I look like this, and it's you that's got the problem, and it's just really straightforward, and it's a bit like a Disney movie or something. Mm-hmm. It's not got the complexity.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Yeah, I want to say this real quick because I was thinking as I was watching it, because I, like I said, I haven't watched the original Sex and the City in years, and there's so much of that series that like stuck with me, like flashes of it, of like, you know, was it Burger left her the post-it note, or
yeah,
or the back and forth around the table when they were talking about sex and Samantha dating the guy who had the funkiest spunk and all of this really like funny or heartbreaking stuff that years later I remember from this series. And I don't remember every show I've ever seen. And just like that, it's kind of all forgettable.
That's yeah,
or you
want to
throw something at the TV. None of it, like,
yeah,
you know.
It's well, we have to get on to Aidan. I'm desperate to talk about it, but just briefly, because we've got to end on Aidan. I phoned one of my best friends who's gay and said, is this a problematic storyline? If somebody only wants to top, is it kind of manipulative to go, I'm going to, because Giuseppe pursued Anthony. Anthony went on like six dates with him without sleeping with him. He really pursued him. And then now they're together and Anthony's fallen for him. And he's like, I'm going to go back to Rome if you don't let me top you. And I was like, is this problematic? And my friend went, no. I said, because I said, if this was a woman and a man had pursued her and pursued her and pursued her, she'd be like, no, 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 no. And then finally she'd been like, okay, I do fancy you. I'm going to date you. And then he'd gone, unless you let me take you up the arse, I'm going back to Rome. I think we would think this is a problematic storyline. I'd be like, she doesn't want to do anal. Just leave her alone.
Yeah.
you made her fall in love with you and now you're threatening to go back to Rome. But my friend said he lives in New York. He's gay. He said it's different because there's no other orifice you can choose from. And he said, I've certainly been in relationships where one or the other of us have said, would you just try this thing? And then the other person tries it and either hates it and then it's a deal breaker or doesn't mind it and is like, I love you, so I'll go along with it. You know, it's like, fine. We do things sometimes that we that isn't our favorite thing, but we're happy to do it. Or loves it. And he said that happens all the time in gay relationships and especially with kink and stuff. Not that anal sex is kink, but he said especially with kink, someone will be like, but can you just try it? And he said he doesn't think it's coercive and he doesn't find the storyline problematic.
Well,
I found it a bit problematic, but I'm not a gay man. So this is why I consulted a gay man in case I was imposing my bisexual womanhood onto it and projecting stuff.
Well, the thing that gets me is like, at the party, Giuseppe does this big speech about how he's thinking about going back to Rome. It has nothing to do with like his ass, but like his other walls, like Anthony's throwing up all these blockades. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. You're not getting the commitment you want. So maybe
the sphincter of his heart.
Yeah. But so if it's not the anal sex, if it's like Anthony just is being way too difficult and Giuseppe wants something to commit to, fine. And then if we cut to them being like, okay, so Anthony decides to try having bottoming with Giuseppe, the scene cuts to like them fucking and they share this kiss, but like Anthony has this face like and it's like, at least show me like it being like a beautiful moment that they enjoy, as opposed to like he doesn't like this like shock and horror and pain, which honestly, if you're not used to anal, is what it feels like.
And, I love your TikTok, Anthony, who said after a 3-course Michelin-starred meal, you would never do that.
Yeah. It's
your TikTok, Anthony, was like, no.
Yeah, totally true. Totally true. There's like prep you have to do in order to
anyway,
yeah, it's just
it was a very strange storyline, but I don't believe that the Sphinx and the sphincter were not related, because in the old days they did that stuff all the time and I'm like, somebody is sending us a message. Can we crack on to Aiden now, because I'm desperate to talk about this. What the actual fuck? This storyline is like, you know when he mentions magic mushrooms? Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think writers throw in things that are on their mind. Did they take mushrooms before they wrote the storyline? Because it seems a lot like it. So Aiden and Gary get back together. He basically confesses, I've been thinking about you for years. We're the true loves of each other's lives. She says, maybe Big was a mistake. Maybe I should have been with Aiden all these years.
Which, by the way, that felt like a throw out to like the fans to acknowledge everyone's like, why were you with Big when Aiden was there and Aiden's the one who's actually a good guy? But then they never explore it. She just goes, maybe it was a mistake. And I'm like, oh no, your husband died and now you're wondering? Like, we need an episode on that if you're going to just line that out there. And then Miranda's like, I don't know what to say about that. Ho-hum, on with the show. Like, I'm like, yeah.
I know. It's very, very strange. And then, okay, they've acknowledged that. And then she's happy now to go to Virginia to spend time with him and his kids. She sells her single gal apartment that she's so attached to, her iconic apartment.
Which she did not randomly give up all through her marriage, by the way. Nor
through her marriage.
She never subletted it. She never rented it out. It was always just there for her as an escape.
And why has she sold it to The jeweler downstairs could not afford it if she had given it to her for $5,000. The jeweler downstairs was crying a few weeks back because her jewelry had been stolen. She had zero cash. You cannot buy an apartment. I'm sorry.
No.
You can't buy an apartment if you're a jeweler in Manhattan. You can't buy an apartment. Like, it doesn't matter how cheap it was. You can't. No. Because you would need a deposit. I don't know. This made no sense because we know the jeweler's poor. Anyway. And anyway, whatever. She could have just, if she just said to her, live there rent free for as long as you want, I would have loved that.
Or charge her rent. Or be a landlord. Like, I thought when that happened,
just,
she was
just
like,
just pay the electricity and da 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 da, stay there as long as you want. That to me, and I know they were trying to do this cut thing, but then it's so cruel because she gives up her place. She buys a 4-bedroom place that she's now going to be rattling around in on her own for Aiden and his 3 boys to come whenever they want. And she also was happy to go to Virginia every other week. She's like, you come here on my weeks, on you know, when the kids, when the only child you have left, who's not even really a child, is 15 now, next week, is going to be with your wife. Okay. If you want to do this storyline of you've got to wait for 5 years, so ridiculous. Firstly, you don't know how long it's going to be because the kid at 17 years of age could get super into basketball, be, you know, or painting or get a girlfriend and be, or boyfriend or whatever, and be just so a different person. Between the ages of 14 and 17, you can find your thing, you can find your people, you can come into your own. And he could be like, Dad, I don't want you hanging around all the time. Mm-hmm. I want to go on a gap year to, you know, Japan because I'm really into manga and I want to be an animator and I've got this amazing opportunity to go on this animation program. He could get into anything. You don't know it's going to be 5 years. Your other kid's going to be 25 at that point and does not want
sitting in their house
waiting for them to come home. It's fucking weird. So you could say for the foreseeable, I need to be in Virginia. I think that's valid. The kid, you could have died. I need to just be there so that if he needs me, it was clearly a cry for help. He doesn't like me being away. I need to be in Virginia. If it's my week, honestly, for a little while, I think I need to just be there with him and not add another element that he's like, I don't want her being my mom. Like, I get that. That's absolutely fair enough. But when the kid is with Kathy, even if he has to be in Virginia, to say that Carrie cannot visit and stay with him for that week. If the kid has a flip out, Carrie jumps on a plane and goes home. Carrie gets an Airbnb in Virginia and goes and stays around a corner. Yeah. What's the actual fuck?
Well, and here's the thing that got me. Like, okay, so I knew that Big was going to die in the first episode. And when that happened, I had like no emotion. Like, I didn't care. Like, that whole thing, I didn't have any feels for. When Aiden is crying in his car, being like, I should have been there. I should have been there. That actually gave me the feels. And here's what I'll say. Carrie has no job. She's richer than sin. If your partner, whom you are moving heaven and earth to make space for in your life, kid gets in that big of a wreck, you get on the fucking plane too and go with him to be the support. You don't like call him up and be like, how's he doing? I'm just going to a party. Like, she's only still in New York for the social thing. And like, so to me, that was the riff right there is like, why aren't these, if they're going to be in each other's lives, then Carrie has
to be partners.
They have to be in each other's life, and Carrie has to do the hard things with him too. And then,
and I understand if he says, look, you know, I need to be with Kathy and the kid, and the kid doesn't know you well enough. Wyatt, we should call him Wyatt. Please don't come. I would understand that. I feel like it's a real strange thing in the writer's room. If you want him to do this, you need to justify it. If you want this weird separation plot line, he needs to say, Kathy has decided she's going to go off and eat Pray Love for a year because she feels like she's been the main parent all these years.
And they throw Kathy under the bus. They're like, he needs me because Kathy was never there. And I'm like, that didn't happen.
Absolutely not true. He was off. Last time we saw Aiden, he was in a fucking marketplace in the Middle East.
Yeah.
In the movie. Come on. It's like Kathy's not there. I think if I'd wanted to write the storyline, I would have had him say, Kathy he's like literally calling Kathy a dick. We've seen that. The kid is really being horrible to his mother. Her boyfriend's Spanish and moving to Spain. And she's like, I need to eat, pray, love for a year. Of course I'll come back and see him. But you need to step up and be the main parent. You're the one he wants. And you need to be the main carer for a year. And I will come back, but here's your responsibility for a year. And let Kathy go off and do something else, which might be dubious parenting, but we don't care about Kathy, so that's fine. And leave him with responsibility, or Kathy gets ill, or Kathy has to go and nurse her parent, or whatever it is. But he says, I'm the only parent this kid's got, and he's driving trucks into trees. I don't think I can prioritize a relationship right now. And Wyatt doesn't want another, doesn't want a stepmother. This is a really tricky time. If I let you come and live with us, and then he, you know, does something stupid or tragic or fatal, I will never forgive myself. I just have to sacrifice this great love for this for a while. And I don't know how long it will be. It could be a year, it could be 5 years. I don't know. And that I buy. But she can't come there when Kathy's with his mom, because I'll be thinking about you all the time. What?
Yeah.
I'll be there. What the fuck? I would say to a man, if I just sold my place and bought a 4-bedroom house and he said this to me, I would say, no, you're just not that into me. Don't blame your child.
Well, like when he's like, no, my kids aren't old enough. My oldest one's only 20. And I'm like, by 20, I had lived in New York for 2 years. You know what I mean? Like I was living.
I know.
And like, I get it that like your son got in this tragic accident and you're really worried about him because he's using drugs and he's acting out and all this. So yeah, you take a couple months, but like at the same time, they're a teenager. Like, yeah, it just feels like Aiden is not like you said in your opening monologue, he's just not that into her, because she's willing to be like, okay, if you need to be in Virginia full time, I'll come and visit you. And he's like, but you can't. And who the fuck waits for 5 years? What, they're
5 years?
They're 55 at this point. Like, she's gonna be 60. Like, no. No. And now, since they are doing a season 3, we know what it's going to be about. It's her going to be like, I have to wait. And then she's going to meet someone. And then she's going to be conflicted because she's afraid she's going to hurt Aiden all over again. But Aiden's the one who stepped back this time. And it's,
you cannot ask anyone to wait for 5 years. You'll be a different person in five years. I'm a different person than I was 5 years ago. I'm a different person than I was. I'll have no idea what I'll want or who I'll be in 5 years. I'll be in a totally different situation, place, whatever. Emotionally, who knows? Maybe I will be the same, but we don't know. To ask someone to wait, what I don't understand, Abigail, are they waiting? Are they asking each other to be celibate for 5 years?
Yeah, that was my other thing. Like, does this mean neither of them are going to date? Like,
because that's not Sex and the City then. That's celibate of the city. And I'm not here for that. Like, I don't understand what she's doing. Like, you're going to give up, you know. She's 56, I think. You're going to give up 56 to 61. Like, when you're still fit, healthy, looking fine, you know, out in the town, you're going to give up 5 years at that age? I don't fucking think so.
No.
And I honestly think you would look him in the eye and go, I am so sorry about your kid, and I get that you need to prioritize him, and I'm happy to be in second place. I'm happy to be in third place. I'm happy to be in fourth place after all of your kids, even the ones that are grown up. However, I cannot be in no place for 5 years. Well, absolutely
especially
not.
Like 2 years ago, she loses her husband. Like 5 years. If anyone knows how much can change in 5 years, it would be Carrie Bradshaw. Like, she's like, no, because life is short. Life is short.
I could be dead in five years. You could be dead in 5 years. We have to find a way to make it work. And they just haven't set up the circumstances enough that you would believe it.
Yeah.
If his kids got something terminal and he and Kathy decided to move in to co-parent again together or something like that, that he was like, this isn't going to work. Like, even if they weren't getting back together, these are all fiction. So you can write anything you want. If his circumstance changed, that he had to nurse his mother with something and his kid had to live with him full time and blah, blah, blah. I could absolutely see there are situations that, like, you go, I'm not going to put you through this because the next 5 years is going to be so hard and I'm not going to have this lovely fun time to spend with you anymore. This isn't it. This isn't good enough. He's just not that into her. You can't, it just doesn't make any sense. So I don't know what I'm going to be watching in season three, but if it's Carrie not having sex, waiting for some guy who doesn't even like her enough to like say, hey, the kid seems fine now, come to Virginia for a couple of weeks, he's gone on vacation with his mom, then fuck him. Fuck him. I'm not here for this. So they're going to have to pull some rabbit out of a hat. I thought what they were going to do is have him say he's really struggling in Virginia. His brothers are off at college. How would you feel about him and me coming to New York for a while? Kathy could come here to do work. And we just think we need to get him away. There's a bad element in Virginia. You know, his friends are all into drugs. And we want to put him in this really cool school. He's good at music. You know, there's a cool music school in York. We think he just needs to start over with new friends. Would he be able to come and live with you and me in your new apartment? Or how? It seems like a house to me. And then she'll be like, yes, yes, yes. And then she has to be stepmother. And then the kid's horrible to her and Aiden sides with the kid one day and they have a huge fight. That's interesting to me.
Or what I thought was going to happen if they ended it was he was going to be like, you need to move to Virginia and we can't have Sex in the City without Carrie Bradshaw in New York. So I thought she would have to choose between her first love, New York City, and her 27th love, Aiden. But it just felt, especially like 2 months in, you decide to sell the apartment you have never given up to get this 4-bedroom house. You're right. It's a fucking house. Like,
wouldn't you be angry? Wouldn't you be like,
I'd be furious. And also if I was in Aiden's position and I had reconnected with someone I had had such a rocky relationship with, if 2 months in, they were like, I'm buying a house for us. I would be like, we need to put the brakes on this. Like, we need.
He said to her, buy the house for you, not for me.
Yeah.
But then he said, our house, like, say our place again, say our place again.
Yeah.
And then he let her sell the old, I don't know. And
also, like.
I mean, it's so ridiculous that she could afford to keep the old place. I really do think they should have made her not so rich because it's unsympathetic when someone has that many choices. And it's not undramatic because she doesn't have to decide. She could be like, maybe I'll sell the apartment or maybe I'll keep it and buy a house. It's like, oh, okay. but I feel for your dilemma. It must be awful for you. Maybe I'll sell it for a song to someone who looks like me when I was young so I can be sentimental, whatever, fucking hell. Well, I said this on the podcast last week, but while Miranda is sofa surfing.
Yeah, that's another thing. Like my whole
I know, Miranda, I was like, apartment. I get it,
you're rich, your friends are rich. Why are you staying in a single bed? I don't understand.
What? Hopefully Miranda will move in with Carrie now.
That would be fun. That would be fun.
I would like that because to see them as two single gals in the city, it would feel a little bit like, you know, oh, they're bringing people home or whatever. She can't be celibate for 5 years.
No.
She loves sex. I'm sorry. I can't accept it. So anyway, season three holds all sorts of stuff for us, but I think it was called The Last Supper because we are presumably going to have the resurrection in season three. Let us hope that that resurrection involves a storyline that makes any fucking sense and some fun. No more mourning, just fun, sex, shoes, Cosmopolitan's what we're all here
for. Yeah, I agree. I agree. It's been a long time since I've like hate watched something. Like this is an interesting place to be in with the show.
Is there anything you are hoping for?
I hope that they continue exploring Miranda's like sex lives because she's the only one like really dating and single. And so I like the idea of
her. Oh, she's met Dolly Wells.
Yeah,
now.
She did. Very cute. She did at the very end. But I hope she stays single and is dating around. And like you said, I do hope Carrie joins her in being single again in their fun girls on the town, because then we have those two being single, and then we have Charlotte in the relationship showing that idea. But I, like you said, I just hope that season three is not 12 episodes of pining over Aiden.
I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't. I mean, I'll have to, because I do this rewatch podcast and I enjoy doing the podcast. But bloody hell, they better not. Listen, I'm an optimist. I'm in Chichester at the moment doing a play. Last night it was 10 o'clock. Everyone said every kitchen would be closed. Susan McComb and I had been to a show. And I said, I believe in Franco Manco being open. She went, it won't be. I'm going to wait outside while you go in and find out that kitchen is closed. I said, I'm an optimist. And most of the time I'm disappointed. However, occasionally, victory is mine. I went in. The guy said, yeah, kitchen's open till 10:30. As long as you order in the next 5 minutes, we're golden. And in fact, he said, I see you're doing a play in Chichester. I guess he recognized Susan off the poster or, you know, whatever. And he said, bring the cast down anytime after the show. Just give us a call. We'll hold the kitchen for you. So Franco Manca Chichester, you know what? My optimism sometimes pays off. If I can believe in you, I can believe in Sex and the City. And I'm just like that. And I'm here for season three.
Yeah.
Please God, can it be a storyline that just doesn't randomly end with Carrie and Seema on the beach in Greece speaking Greek?
Yeah. Also, by the way, bring back no more lost loves. No more guys from Sex and the City. I don't want to see them anymore. It's too complicated. I want it to move forward and have fun and be complicated with new men. Like, I think
that's reasonable.
Yeah. Like, don't bring back Burger. Don't bring any of them back. Like, just move forward with new men. New men.
Okay, so Michael Patrick King, you've heard our criticisms, you've heard our requests. Please take them on board, and we'll meet you back here for season three. Abigail Eichemann, this has been an absolute joy and a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on the Guilty Feminist Watchers and Just Like That, the Sex of the City reheal.
Thank you so much for having me, Deborah. If everyone listening could follow me on my socials, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and Twitter. I don't use that one anymore. Ignore it. YouTube, whatever. It's all under my first name, at Abigailia. And I will be doing a live recording of my podcast, Neurodivergent Moments, at the London Podcast Festival, September 14th, 9:30 p.m. with my co-host, Joe Wells. It'll be a lot of fun. So if any of you guys want to come down and watch us talk about neurodivergency, by all means, London Podcast Festival.
Absolutely do that. It's a great podcast. And also, we are at the London Podcast Festival doing Global Pillage and a Guilty Feminist as well at King's Place the same weekend. So go to guiltyfeminist.com if you want to get tickets for that, or the King's Place website, kingsplace.co.uk. There are loads of great podcasts there. Check them out.
Yeah.
Also, please come and see my play in Chichester. It's called Never Have I Ever. Tickets are selling fast, and it stars Susan McComa, Alexandra Roach, Greg Wise, and Amit Shah. And it is really shaping up brilliantly. I'm very excited about it. You have been listening to the Guilty Feminist Watchers and Just Like That with me, Deborah Frances White, and my very special guest, Abigail Eichemann. The producer for the Spotted Data Shop was Tom Selinsky. The Guilty Feminist is part of the Acast Creator Network, and Just Like That is on Max in the US and Sky Comedy and now in the UK. See you soon for season three.
The Guilty Feminist is provided exclusively from Acast. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.